Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the Monday edition of The Yard. And it's been a busy weekend. It has been. I hope it's been a good one for you. I spent Sunday reading through book proofs and making minor corrections and things of that nature. And so I finished that up this morning. Got one thing left to do. And of course, then they'll finalize things and then the file will be pushed off to the printers. Getting close, kids. Getting close. And if you hadn't done so, go to dutynoblebook.com and you can pre-order. All copies ordered through the website will be signed, for whatever that's worth. I know people like a signed copy. But if you're a fan of Mississippi State, you love Mississippi State sports, and you love the history of our fine institution, I think this is a book that you're going to enjoy. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun. And I can't believe, you know, it's like here we are. You know, within days of Zach Arnett getting fired, I thought, you know, let's look into this. When's the last time we had a coach not finish a year? Did some research. Some of that research led me to Major Raph Sassy, who actually wasn't the last coach since Arnett. Actually, Red Cagle was. He didn't complete the season with us. But Sassy led me to Duty Noble coaching freshman football. And I thought, how come nobody knows this? Somebody should have wrote a book about Duty Noble. I thought, you know what? Maybe I'm somebody. And in fact, I was somebody. And so it's crazy, though, that we go from making a few phone calls, kind of inquiring. It's like, hey, do you think this is a viable project? And now all of a sudden we got a book, the longest book I've ever written. And today I was thumbing through some of the letters that were provided to me by Duty Noble's family. And it was interesting, one guy in particular who was a friend and supporter of Duty Noble through some very difficult times. He was writing a letter and he said, hey, you know, read extensively about Old Main burning down, and I'm surprised they didn't try to pin that on you since they blame you for everything. You know, so the more things change, the more they stay the same. It's pretty crazy how it works, right? The names change, the problems don't. Which reminds me, too, I was messaging last night with a dear friend, talking about the book. The thing that's so incredible to me is how the cycles with State and Ole Miss just repeat and repeat and repeat and repeat. Right? Ole Miss has always been cheaters. It's true. And I can take you all the way back into the 1910s and prove that. And Ole Miss, one of the first teams that was ever sanctioned by the NCAA there in the 50s for illegal inducements for football. You know, and so, you know, nothing's really new under the sun. And then on the Mississippi State side, it's like, how many times can we make bad hires, right? How many times can we make hires that maybe are of satisfaction to certain alums to the detriment of the university? How many times do we take the cheap way out? And when, as you read the book, it's going to get very frustrating. That aspect of it especially. You're going to read through it, it's going to be like, man, why? We went from riding high. I mean, you know, Sassy had us in the Orange Bowl. We were competing for conference titles. We have a little rough patch there. We bring in Alan McKean, and all of a sudden things are going great. Winning bowl games, winning conference championships. And, you know, some people just weren't happy, you know. And the descendants of those people are alive and well today. And so all that spirit of malcontent still exists. There's always somebody out there that thinks they know better and do better. Speaking of which, I'm not going to get political on the show, but I'll tell you, I've seen some of these clips today of the director of the Secret Service having to answer before Congress. I can assure you that no matter how bad your day has been, short of you losing a pet or a loved one. Nobody's having a worse day than she is. And I'll tell you this. I don't care who you vote for. I just hope that you vote. But this bipartisan effort to try to get to the truth and the way that people that have been political enemies have become political allies in trying to get the truth out there has been encouraging to see. Because I'm a person that is largely apathetic about anything in federal government, just to kind of lay it out there for you. It's true. I don't trust a lot of these people. But, yeah, I mean, if you've seen the clips, man, you see what I'm talking about. And I believe in accountability for everybody. For me, you, and certainly our elected officials. Absolutely. And I go back to, you know, I'm you may not notice about me, one of my favorite movies of all time is V for Vendetta. I absolutely love the movie. I love how so much of that is, probably correct. Especially the line about, people shouldn't live in fear of their governments. Their governments should live in fear of their people. I firmly believe that. And I don't think that times we do enough to hold them accountable. And so I think it's important to be involved in the process. Some people are just happy to vote. Other people are just happy to complain. But there are other people out there, they're like, hey, they'll go to a school board meeting. They'll go to a city council meeting, and they will speak their piece. And I think that's very important. I think everybody should feel represented in government. And I don't think that's always the case. I think a lot of people feel like that, hey, my concerns fall on deaf ears. That doesn't mean you shouldn't make them. Firm believer in that. Absolutely a firm believer in each and every bit of that. And so if you can see those clips, you can see there are people from both sides of the aisle that are furious about this. And it is clear that it was an operation that was basically a Mickey Mouse type deal. And it's good to see some people asking questions. We as the American people deserve answers. We deserve, even if we don't like the answers. There's some things in life that we talk about. I mean, you go back to A Few Good Men, right? With Colonel Nathan Jessup on the stand. There are a lot of things we really don't want to talk about, but we still hope they're happening, right? And what I mean by that is that the people that are sworn to defend us have to do some things at times that maybe we don't have the stomach for to protect the American people, right? And so I think we all see, I know those things happen. I just don't want to talk about them. But something like this, it's crazy, man. There has to be accountability. There has to be transparency and accountability. And transparency in the federal government don't usually mix. But again, enough politics for us. But hope you're having a great day. Hope you're having a great week. Just 5 weeks away from college football. We're going to begin our opponent previews today. As we get closer to the season, we'll kind of break down some other teams as we get into fall camp and kind of see, how the rest of the league looks. And again, a lot of people not expecting much from Mississippi State. Even some of our fans not expecting a whole lot from Mississippi State. I think by and large, our fans are like, Steve, if we can get to a bowl game this year, in year one, and be exciting on offense, that's probably the best we can hope for. And I agree with that. Of course, they called me Rose Bowl for a reason, even though it's not technically true. But all that I understood, I'm a guy that has some at times unbridled exuberance when it comes to Mississippi State athletics. But I think this year our expectations need to be measured. To be fair to Jeff Lebby and his staff, especially considering how many spots we have to fill on this roster. Speaking of getting filled, Bulldog Burger Company can cure what ails you. One of the things that I love about life is a great meal, right? The older I get, the more that matters to me. I just want to get a good meal. A lot of times, the worker's life, the writer's life, sometimes is very reclusive, especially when I'm working on a book. It's just me and the dogs most of the time. Dana's running the spa, but some nights I'll sit around here and think, man, I haven't had anything substantial to eat today. So I hit her up and say, hey, I'm going to run by and get this Bulldog Burger Company. What do you want? Why don't you order online? I'll swing by and get it, and then we can eat together at the spa. It's very convenient. It truly is. And they do such a good job packaging up the food. So when you get it home, it's still warm. Now, not to say I'm not going to use a microwave every now and again, because sometimes I like it piping hot. I even got a steak from the grill over the weekend. Ate that at home. Love it. Eat With Us does such a great job for us. But Bulldog Burger Company, three great locations to serve you. University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. We all need more of that. In addition to that, too, this chocolate shake to go, man. When you eat in, get the chocolate shake to go. Or maybe perhaps that bread pudding. Because, when you get home late at night, you're going to think, oh, I feel so good. But, man, I'd love to have something a little bit sweet, right? And there's just something about it. I guess it kind of carries over from childhood, right? When you were a kid, it's like you'd say, Mom, can we get a snack? Oh, we got snacks at home. Well, now you're an adult. You may have snacks at home, but they're not going to compete with that Shipley's bread pudding from Bulldog Burger Company. So be a grown-up and get the dessert to go. How's that, Mom? Yeah. We'll do what we want when we want. We want to enjoy life. Bulldog Burger Company adds to the enjoyment of our existence. Be sure and check them out today. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. All right, let's take a look at Eastern Kentucky. The Colonels, our FCS opponent for this year. Do you guys, are you guys, you know, maybe fans of Eastern Kentucky? Suspect probably not. So let me do my best to kind of bring you up to speed. For an FCS program, they were pretty good last year and played a pretty ambitious schedule, all things considered. They got absolutely drilled in week one at Cincinnati, 66-13. Of course, it's a new era. Luke Fickell's gone. Luke Fickell was the guy that everybody wanted. I remember some people telling me, oh, yeah, he's interested in Mississippi State. So I got a hold of some people at his agency, and they're like, God, where's this coming from? Yeah. It's like, nah, Luke's going to wait around here until his kids graduate from Catholic school before he takes on the job. Not all sources are created equal. All right, so then game two, the Colonels nearly pulled off the upset in Lexington against Kentucky. Now, there's a connection there, right? I don't know if you – and we'll get to that shortly, but it's not just an in-state rival type deal. You know, there is just a connection between Kentucky and Eastern Kentucky. But, man, at the half, guys, it was a 7-7 game. Eastern Kentucky had the lead, 7-0 lead throughout the first quarter. Kentucky pulls even. And then what do you know? In the third, EKU takes a lead again. And then from there, the Wildcats kind of took over and won that thing 28-17. But, guys, in the fourth quarter, it was a 21-17 game. Let that sink in for a second. They go to Lexington and take that game and make it a one-score game in the fourth quarter. They're not going to be scared. They got all summer to prepare. Now, we're going to wax these guys. But this is a team, obviously, that is well-coached. Now, week three, they play in Richmond, Kentucky, the home opener against Western Carolina. They dropped that game 27-24. So an 0-3 start to the year. They could have mailed it in, but I'm sure the coaching staff is like, hey, you know, we played Cincinnati and Kentucky, and you know, we should have beaten Western Carolina. Let's just hang on to the rope here. So what do? The next week at home, they upset the number 16 Southeast Missouri State team out of Cape Girardeau, Missouri, 41-38, and a barn burner it was. But again, you look at this thing, and you say, like, oh, hey, they're 1-3, but you factor in that loss at Kentucky, it's a big feather in the cap. Even it's a moral loss, but if you're an FCS team and you take an SEC team into the fourth quarter down a score, less than a score, you got to feel good about life. You lose a nail-biter to Western Carolina, and then you upset Southeast Missouri. You upset SEMA 41-38. Things began to pick up from there. They traveled to Florence, Alabama. Took care of the UNA Lions down there, 32-22. Tarleton State. And I don't know if you guys know much about Tarleton State. Tarleton State obviously making the push to be a D1 program. Last year, their offensive coordinator, former Bulldog offensive line coach Mason Miller, had an outstanding year last year. I mean, have you looked into Tarleton State at all? And they were, of course, have the petition last year to try to get them in a bowl game and things like that. Guys, Tarleton State went 8-3 last year, and one of the three losses to Eastern Kentucky. 41-35 in double overtime. These guys are clearly not uncomfortable in close ball games. The next week, the three-game winning streak is snapped on the road at Gardner-Webb, former Mississippi State FCS opponent during the Croom years. Keon Humphreys owns those guys, but 35-32 losers at Gardner-Webb. They bounce back the next week and head to St. George, Utah. I know some people in St. George, Utah. It's a beautiful part of the country. And they go to Utah Tech and they win 34-30. And all of a sudden you look at their conference rankings here, their conference standings. Guys, they're 3-0 in their own league. How cool is that? All right, the next week, everybody's feeling good about life. Number 17, Austin Peay, the Governors, They roll into Richmond, Kentucky, and they sneak out of there with a 33-30 overtime win. So, again, it's another close ball game. They go to Conway, Arkansas to play UCA. Not sure if they had any doctored bats or anything to work with, but the number 25 UCA Bears win 27-24. Again, a very competitive game, and they close out the year by taking care of Stephen F. Austin 36-24. So you look at this thing, man, the only time that these guys were absolutely blistered was week one in Cincinnati, Ohio. That's it. Every other game was competitive, and every game after Kentucky that they lost was a one-score game. You start working through that, technically, I think they were all a field goal game. Yeah, they were. Lose to Western Carolina by a field goal, lose to Gardner-Webb by a field goal, lose to Austin Peay by a field goal, and lose to Central Arkansas by a field goal. So I say that not because I expect them to come in here and match up with us from a talent standpoint. That's just not going to happen. It may be similar to what we saw in week one last year when they get to Starkville. But this is a competitive team. And listen, I get it. I'm not going to sit here and romanticize all this. But don't be surprised if these guys don't bring some fight. Of course, you know, they should wear down, you know, with the depth, you know, that we have. But it's so interesting to me. You go back and you look at some of these teams, and it's an FCS team. State should absolutely roll. But
you ever Googled yourself? You may be alarmed to know exactly how much of your private information and data is out there for anybody to access. Whether it be your phone number, your home address, or details about your family. It could be your kids' names, their ages. Whether you agree to this disclosure or not. And that's because data brokers are collecting and selling your information to marketers, scammers, and basically anyone willing to pay. It's the reason robocallers know your name, and while ads seem to follow you on every digital platform out there. Well, Aura fights back for you. They remove your personal data from broker sites and keep it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a data breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just data broker removal. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your life online. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager to keep all your logins safe, and they even give you spam call protection to cut off those stupid scammers. Aura also scans the dark web regularly for your most sensitive information, like your social security number, bank logins, passwords, and they will notify you instantly if you are somehow exposed. If your identity is ever stolen, you're backed up by up to $5 million in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support to help you recover everything quickly. Other services charge about the same, but they only cover one or two areas. With Aura, you get it all. Data broker removal, credit and identity monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all with one simple app. Aura removes what is already exposed, protects what isn't, and puts you back in control. Right now, you can try Aura free for 14 days when you visit aura.com/remove. That gives them plenty of time to go ahead and start protecting your data. They can remove your personal information from data broker sites. Sign up today at aura.com/remove and get the peace of mind that your privacy, identity, and finances are all safeguarded. That's Aura, aura.com/remove. Certain terms and conditions apply. Be sure and check it out today at aura.com.
Again, 5-6 overall, 4-2 within their league. And perhaps they'll be better in their league this year. But as a program, just under 30 points a game. Now, they allowed 33, and of course, some of that's skewed because Cincinnati put up 66. But 99 first downs on the year, rushing. 144 through the air, 22 by penalty. So 265 first downs. Their opponents had just 262. So they're a team that moves with chains. Pretty balanced offense in many respects. A little more pass happy than run happy, but again, good balance. They ran for 1,778 yards net last year and then threw for 3,033. They got some RPO stuff in there.
38 touchdowns on the year, allowed 48. Kicking game was decent for them. 19 of 25. Their opponents, 10 of 12. And a lot of that's, you know, again, you look back to those field goal games, goodness. And maybe red zone defense wasn't as great as it should have been. Team pretty good on third down, too. 59 of 137 for a 43% conversion rate. Fourth downs, 9 of 13. And when you come to Starkville and you're Eastern Carolina from the FCS, you have absolutely nothing to lose. And so when you get in those situations, you're going to go. You're just going to throw caution to the wind. Say, guys, we'll go down here and get us a check, and you never know. We're going to go out here and just play wide open. 24 sacks against, and then they only had 14 sacks of their opponents. So, you know, not a pressure-happy team. Converted 31 of 32 PATs, allowed 43 of 44. PAT defense, such a crucial part of games, right? But look at their red zone numbers here. Their conversion rate as an offense is very good. 44 of 48, 29 times, so there's 44 touchdowns. Defensively, they only allowed scores 38 out of 49 times. So the red zone defense is actually pretty decent there. Allowed 30 touchdowns of those 49 attempts. Look at some individual numbers here too. And again, it's difficult to know, you know, how things look, you know, with the transfer portal. You know what I'm saying? Like, you never know, right? You never know who's going, who's staying, especially at that level. But Eastern Kentucky did get some transfers. Everybody does, in some respect. But they really spent a lot of time on defense in the portal. Now, some D1 bounce back guys. So at the quarterback position, they bring in Matt Morrissey from Western Illinois. 13 touchdowns, 2,014 yards. Completion percentage, not too bad, 207 of 339. They also added offensive lineman Liam Coppinger from the College of Ohio and Nick Bryan of Kent State. I don't know if you'd call that an upward move. Probably from College of Idaho, yeah. But it's interesting, you know, to see how they hype these guys up. They're excited to have them, as we should as well. On the defensive side of the football, they bring in Jaquez McGowan from Tennessee Tech. Secondary, they added six new players, Jaheim Ward, Moses Sarwa, Sam Robertson, their relation, Rashad Hintz, Garnell Wilds Jr., and Rod Webb. So it's interesting, you start working through this. You know, some of these guys are not D1 transfers, they're junior college guys. So Ward comes in from Austin Peay, Sarwa from Dodge City Community College, and then Robertson, again, their relation, comes in from Northern Illinois, was originally an Iowa Western junior college guy. And then Hintz comes over from the Fighting Joe Moorheads from the Akron Zips. Wilds was from the San Francisco City College. And then Webb from the College of Charleston. So, again, everybody's looking for players, and they get a few. And, of course, you bring in a quarterback to kind of shake things up a little bit. But kind of working through some things here. Last year, Braden Sloan led the team with 765 yards rushing. It was kind of a two-pronged attack. Joshua Carter with 714. And the number of carries, pretty much even. Sloan had about 23 more. But, yeah, they spread it around a little bit. Parker McKinney also netted 225. And, of course, again, we talk about some of the different components of this. He was the quarterback last year, redshirt senior. So it's going to be a new guy this year. And, again, that's where you start working through these things and begin to think, okay, maybe Matt Morrissey from Western Illinois proves to be the guy. I'm sure he came in there with that expectation. So brand-new quarterback, week one, facing a defense that there's really no film of. You don't really know what to expect. Defensively, we ought to be in a really good spot here against these guys, regardless of who they are or where they're from. Parker McKinney took the lion's share of the snaps last year. The only one other attempt was made. That they had 420 attempts thrown by quarterbacks. And 419 of them were Parker McKinney. Look at the receiving side of things. Jaden Smith, we talked about him earlier. He's clearly a guy that they like to use in a variety of different ways. But
Maybe we didn't talk about him. He's a receiver. Had one rushing attempt. That's what I'm remembering. But let him in catches with 73. Jaden Smith. Interesting. And that's kind of how it goes, right? Eastern Kentucky builds this guy up, and guess what? He transfers to UTEP. You know, so that's always something worth talking about, right? We mentioned Braden Sloan. Yeah, he was the guy that was their leading rusher last year, also their second leading receiver. Well, guess what? He's at Ball State now. You know, and so you start running through these numbers, you begin to realize, I mean, everybody in the FCS is trying to get into the FBS, whether it be the MAC or whatever. And so the leading players on this team from an offensive standpoint are just no longer there. Quarterback gone, graduation. Leading receiver, gone to UTEP. Leading running back, gone to Ball State. And so it'll be interesting to see what this team can do. But again, brand new quarterback, new offensive faces, and new offensive places coming against a defense you don't know very well. Could be a rough day in Starkville, Mississippi for Eastern Kentucky. And again, it's so difficult to kind of keep track of all this stuff too, just because of the fact that, you know, it's not a team that we see regularly, so we're not, you know, well acquainted with their roster. And then you begin to work through the stats, and it's like, hey, this guy had a big year. Oh, lo and behold, he's somewhere else. It's interesting to see the dynamics and how it all kind of trickles down to everybody else, right? We think we have it bad at times, and State has actually handled the football portal pretty well. You go back and look at last year. I mean, Xavion Thomas leaving wasn't great. And now we got to deal with him. He's at LSU, even though we don't play him this year. But you understand my point. He's still within our league. But you go think, if you're Eastern Kentucky's coach, all of a sudden you build these guys up until your best players are gone. That's a tough thing to deal with. Really tough. And so we mentioned the coach. Walt Wells is the coach at Eastern Kentucky. He is, late 50s, 57? Yeah. He's been there since not 2019. He's a native of Nashville, Tennessee. Played 3 years at Austin Peay, 4 years at Austin Peay. Got his undergrad at Belmont. Was an offensive lineman, so you expect his guys to be pretty well coached and disciplined. Began coaching at Cumberland once his playing career was over. Was the associate head coach and offensive coordinator at Cumberland in Tennessee. Then he goes to EKU as a tight ends coach and then is moved over after three seasons to be the offensive line coach, leaves there and goes to Western Kentucky for the better part of a decade. Spent some time at South Florida in 2013. He was at New Mexico State in 14. Comes back to EKU in 2015 as the associate head coach and the offensive line coach. And then what do you know, in 16, he goes to Tennessee as a quality control guy. Became the offensive line coach at Tennessee in 17, and then goes over to be a QC guy at Kentucky from 2018 to 19, and then gets the job at Eastern Kentucky. So a pretty well-traveled guy with a lot of connections to the Commonwealth up there. Pretty interesting. Yeah, transferred from Austin Peay to Belmont. Yeah. So got his master's degree in human relations management. Has a wife, Jennifer, a couple kids. You know, but it's been interesting. As a head coach, his head coaching record is 20-20. It's sometimes you never know with this stuff. Like they had a, regular season records 20-20. I guess you never can test with this stuff. But he was the Atlantic Sun Coach of the Year back in 21 and 22. But it's been last year was a tough year. But if you're an FCS program, you're just trying to advance in your league and trying to get in the playoffs. They made the playoffs one time in his time and lost in the first round. But again, it's interesting to start thinking about, hey, what should we expect? Well, you know, I think most people would say, Steve, it's an FCS thing. We should expect to roll. And I agree with that. We talk about Walt's experience on the offensive line. They do have Peyton Collins, who was an FCS preseason All-American offensive lineman. So that'll be awfully interesting too. You know, this is a guy, you know, obviously a guy that has spent a lot of time coaching linemen, recruiting linemen, developing linemen. So they've got a guy there that's got some accolades. But I think based on first blush, and as we get a little bit closer, you know, as we get to week one, We'll have a chance to kind of see what they look like after camp and kind of what they're dealing with. Because you never know. Injuries happen in camps. You know, people show up. And you know, I don't know how extensively the Richmond, Kentucky media covers Eastern Kentucky football. But we'll have more information then. But just based on first blush and based on the known losses off this team, it ought to be a game that we win handily. And you probably didn't need me to spend that much time to kind of assure you of that. But I think it's important for us to go in here with some workable knowledge of who we're playing. And so when we come back on Wednesday, we'll start talking a little more about Arizona State. Kind of give you a first look at Arizona State. I got to buy a plane ticket soon, too. Really excited about that. I know you guys are as well. A chance to go out there and watch Bulldogs play in a venue that we don't normally get the chance to do. I would venture to say that before we went out and played the Arizona Wildcats, I guess the last time we went out that far west to play a game may have been a Sun Bowl. Maybe. I have to do some research on that. But, yeah, we don't go that way very often, and with good reason. And the jet lag thing, for some reason, that lingers. I think everybody just needs to come float right whenever we get back. But looking forward to that for sure. All right, time for today's Top 10 List is always brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. Blair's my buddy. Blair can be your buddy, too. There's so many things in life that require a big decision. Take the guesswork out of your mortgage concerns and just deal with a proven professional, Blair Chandler, 601-500-2344. 601-500-2344. He doesn't need me to give you his resume, but I will. 23 years of experience, coming up on 24. Nobody stays in any industry by accident over 20 years. Blair is a place here. Blair is a season ticket holder in multiple sports. Blair's a guy that knows how to get things done. Again, take the guesswork out of it. You know, it's like, well, I don't know what to do. Okay, let me help you. Just call Blair today, 601-500-2344. Whether you're looking for a game day condo, whether you're looking for your first home or maybe your second home, maybe you're looking to upgrade, maybe you've outgrown your current residence, Blair is the guy to call. Blair is the guy to trust. And get that pre-qualification letter too. You want to get your real estate agent really motivated. We've got some great real estate agents in the Bulldog family. But you want to give them a little lead time here? Yeah, get that pre-qualified letter. That way you know exactly what you're looking for within your price range. You don't want to buy a home above your means. It's nice to have that big home, but you know what? You got to pay for it too. And there's no point living life being stressed because your DTI is out of whack. Steve, what's my DTI? Well, let Blair tell you. Visit him again at closewithblair.com, 601-500-2344. All right. We're going to talk a little bit about Dave Mershon in the next segment of the show. And we're just basically kind of in a holding pattern right now as things kind of play out. Listen, I know there's been some reports out there. Some people are like, hey, this is going to happen. There's really nothing to know yet, but I'm going to give you the latest on things. There were some premature reports. A lot of people share opinions, and there's nothing wrong with that. Okay, and that's the thing, too. There's some people that will qualify what they say as an opinion. They'll say, hey, here's what I think is going to happen. And that may be based on like an educated guess. That doesn't mean that they're attaching their byline to it and saying, hey, this is definitively what's going to happen. And I wish people could kind of give people a little grace there, right? Just because somebody says they think it's going to happen doesn't mean they're a sourced report. They're just kind of offering their opinion, and that's perfectly okay. You should share your opinion too. Come over to jeanspage.com, message board. You can share all day. So we're going to wait. And so today's top 10 songs about waiting. You didn't see that one coming, did you? Top 10 songs about waiting. You just never know where I'm going to go next. All right, here we go. And this is going to encompass a lot of generations. It's going to cover decades. It's going to cover different genres. But here we go. Number 10. We're going to go way back. Way back to when Lou Reed was a superstar with the Velvet Underground. Featuring Nico, a lot of people's first real musical crush, Nico, yeah. The Velvet Underground's I'm Waiting for the Man, kind of like we're doing right now. We're waiting for Dave Mershon. In many respects, kind of the heart and soul of this team to kind of let us know what he's going to do.
And there's a lot that can happen, right? I mean, Dave Marchand comes back all of a sudden. You start thinking, you know, this is a lineup that's got the potential to be an Omaha team. If he doesn't come back, you think, well, we probably got to dip back into the portal just to find another offensive piece, right? We'll talk a little more about that too. Number nine, I know many of you are really hip on the, and I hate to use the word hip, but so many of you hipsters out there. It's a singer-songwriter, the acoustic performer. Great vocal songwriting quality is amazing. It's Jack Johnson's Sitting, Waiting, Wishing. It's kind of what we're doing right now. We're sitting, we're waiting, wishing Dave Marchand comes back. It's true. Number eight, I almost forgot this one. I was working through the list and I thought, you know, there's another one I'm missing. And it's great. I love this song. It's one of my favorite Hootie and the Blowfish songs. I know many of you are big Darius Rucker fans too. Now, I'll be honest with you, in the beginning, I had a connection to this band through a mutual friend. Her name was Sherry, and she and I worked in a retail furniture business together. She was a graduate of South Carolina and was a contemporary and a friend of the band Hootie and the Blowfish before they got their record deal. And as soon as things started rolling, she goes, hey, you got to check out my friend's band. The next thing, like 6 weeks later, Hold My Hand was everywhere. Sherry Grant is her name. I suspect it still is her name. But Sherry kind of put me on the Hootie and the Blowfish bandwagon. And so in the beginning, I was kind of like, I don't know. These guys are pretty good, you know. They proved to be a lot bigger than I think most of us expected. That debut album, I think every one of you had a copy of it. And if you didn't, you got a friend to burn your copy. But everybody seemed to have it. But the follow-up was just as good, if not better. So to fit our list today, it's Hootie and the Blowfish is I Will Wait. Because we're standing like a soldier for you. You hold your secrets. Yeah, it's true. That's a great song, man. I love that track. A little up-tempo, too. Love the harmonies on it. I think it's an amazing song. And you knew this next one would be on the list. Especially those of you of a certain age. It's Tom Petty's The Waiting coming in at number 7. Because the waiting is the hardest part. Truer words have never been written or sung. You know how it is. It's one thing, like one of the things that my dad taught me years ago about business, and I still abide by these principles. Take care of all the stuff that other people are waiting on you for first thing in the morning. Don't have anybody waiting on you. My dad was the kind of guy, he got to the office early, and he would get his desk cleared off for the most part and get everything that everybody else needed a signature on or some clarification on. He would do all that stuff first. And then distribute it back out to their desk. So when they got to work the next morning, they had a chance to kind of get a running start to their day. And so, yeah, you know how it is. When you're sitting around, like right now, I got one chapter left to read book proofs of. We've had some issues kind of getting that settled. So this is the third attempt now. I'll probably have it today. We'll finish that up and I'll be done with the book, with all that stuff, all the proofing that goes with it. But yeah, when you're sitting around waiting, like I'd love to have that chapter so I could go ahead and be officially done with approving proofs. Be great. And real quickly here, this is the thing too. You talk about separating the wheat from the tare, right? There's so many people out there that want to write a book. And this is the part of the process nobody talks to you about. Like I've been done writing this book for weeks. Finished. Yeah, I had to do a few little housekeeping things here and there, you know, pin out the intro and things like that, you know, finish up acknowledgments. But as far as like the actual research and writing, it's been done for weeks. And then you wait for all these editing notes to come back around. And then you agree to changes or you make changes yourself. Then it has to go back through the whole loop, the whole process again. Then when you think you've got a workable manuscript, then it goes to layout. They typeset it. Right, they go out there and they define things and they get it put into a book form. Then it comes back to you. And then you go through it, you're looking for all any little odd things, some spacing problems. And you go back and read for content. And then they give you all that stuff back. And so this is the thing too, and it's part of the process. But it's important to understand, like the whole, I tell you guys all the time, planning a book, writing a book, researching a book is amazing. It is such a fun experience. The work part of this is not the writing. It's not even really the editing. It's all the stuff at the end, right? All the proofing, all the things you got to go back and check. And sometimes something gets changed, and like you found some things just yesterday, like one word gets changed in a paragraph, and you go back to the original manuscript and you're like, hey, this wasn't exactly what I was going to articulate. Because like somebody will make a change and you're like, hey, well, I think it flows better this way. And it's like, what? The next thing you know, we've made so many changes, the paragraph kind of loses its meaning. Then you got to go back and say, no, guys, no. We've changed this too much. We've got to go back to the original manuscript and be more in line with this. And you've got to read every paragraph and every sentence to ensure that it's articulating and expressing what you want it to say. And then the next thing you know, when it goes off the print, you're just kind of waiting around, right? I mean, there's nothing you can do to finish up on that. But I can assure you that like there are a lot of people out there, again, that think they want to write a book. But this is the stuff that kind of like when you get done with this part of it, you're like, you know what? I don't know when I'm going to be ready to write another one. Because like this really takes a lot from you. I spent the whole day yesterday and all morning today working on this. And it's a book that I know well, obviously, because I wrote it. But then when you get to this aspect of it, like you get, this is where you start kind of getting tired of it. Like the process itself starts getting a little tedious. You think, you know what? My mind needs a break from this for a while. And then next thing you know, I go out on a book signing tour and I meet all of you. And all of a sudden you begin like tweeting me and posting on Facebook how much the book means to you and what you learned. And maybe your grandfather is mentioned, right? And maybe you found out that he wrote Duty Noble a letter and you didn't know about that before. And it's like, oh, wow, how special is this? And then all of a sudden, I'll be rejuvenated, ready to go again. Yeah, that's how it works. All right, number six. I remember this. I remember, I'm trying to think what year it was. Was it 89, maybe the summer of 89? Perhaps, I believe that's correct. The summer of 89. And of course, you know, when you're a teenager, you think you know all about love and you don't know anything. You think you do, but you don't know. At least I didn't. I thought I did. But I remember I went out with this girl and I had known her from, I guess, middle school. She was like a year or two younger than me. And all of a sudden, you know, you get in high school and, you know, everybody starts driving and you're like, hey, well, she turned out to be pretty cute, you know. And anyway, we go out on a date and it was great. And dummy Steve, of course, you know, got his feelings involved, and then like 2 weeks later, her and her family worked with Exxon. They got shipped to Egypt. Yeah. Egypt. And then Richard Marx had the song Right Here Waiting came out. And it's like you think to yourself, I'll wait for you all these years. You know, I'll wait for you to get back and finish your high school, and I'll be in college, and we'll go to Mississippi State together. You know, that's what you tell yourself. Of course, none of that ever happens. No matter how much you mean it or how much you think, doesn't happen. And so it seemed like every time that I walked in the living room, Right Here Waiting from Richard Marx was on MTV. So thank Richard, you and your hairsprayed mullet. Thank you very much for that. But it is an amazing song, and it's kind of how things work. All right, number five, another guy that doesn't have hair, kind of the anti-Richard Marx, but they sing in a similar fashion. We got to know him on American Idol. We grew to love him. He turned down the frontman job in Fuel, elected to put his own band together, and everybody was pumped when that debut album came out. A lot of people have moved on, but now Chris Daughtry is kind of back in the spotlight again. Chris making great music these days. Had a great song a few years ago called Waiting for Superman. And basically, it's about a young lady that has been through some bad relationships. And life maybe hadn't been fair, and certainly her picker may be wrong. But she's waiting for that guy to come along to kind of see her for who she is, right? See value in her. And that's one of the things about love and relationships that is difficult to quantify at times, right? Everybody needs a biggest fan. And then when maybe you find out that the person that you're aligned with isn't cheering as hard for you as you are for them, it's difficult to take. And then you find out that maybe perhaps that person's not cheering for you at all. Sometimes people get caught up and trapped in life and they get stuck in relationships. And it's like, we're just going to make the best of it and ride this thing out. I just think you deserve better. I do. I think I deserve better. Like when I think about those situations in my life, bad relationships I've had, you know, everybody deserves to be loved at some point. At some level. When you think about that, it's like all these bad relationships. And like, you know, the thing that I've learned about that, again, something, you know, a Freddie Robertson-ism, the one thing that he told me, I was
kind of coming of age. And he says, if you want to improve your dating prospects, improve yourself first. I didn't get it at the time, but he was exactly right. You know, whether that means going to college, getting a degree, getting an advanced degree, getting in the gym, eating right, going to church, whatever. You work on yourself first, and you'll be amazed at the quality of applicants, right? Their qualifications will be a lot grander than maybe what you've accepted in the past. That was my thing. When I met Dana, it was one of those crazy things that I had already made up in my mind, and little did she know, I had like 6 dates that week. Yeah, true story. And I hadn't been out of jail long, so I had to make up for lost time. I met her and never went out with anybody else. And I'd made up my mind that I wasn't going to settle for. I was going to date around. Like, I wasn't just going to, like, the first girl that showed me some attention. It's like, well, hey, do you just want to get together? And let's, you want to go steady with me? You know, that was, you want to go, are we going together? That was the way we used to use it back then. I don't know how you kids do today. But it was like, hey, you know, so-and-so's going with so-and-so. That's the way we did it. And so I just wasn't going to, just the first girl that showed me some attention, I just wasn't going to do it. I said, I'm not going to settle this time. I'm going to take my time, find the right person. And I did, and I think she'll take the same. All right, number 4, we go right from all this sappy love stuff right into something completely different. Only on the Boneyard can we go from Richard Marx and Daughtry to Slipknot. That's right, Wait and Bleed. And those of you that know the song, you knew it was coming at some point. If you knew me and my love and appreciation for Corey Taylor, you knew Slipknot was going to make the list. Wait and Bleed is your number 4 track. Absolutely love it. I think in many ways you may be able to argue that this may be the Slipknot song to a lot of people. This may be the one. And some of you fans are like, oh, no, Steve, that's kind of a quote. No, trust me. You know, to people on the outside looking into our world, that may be the one they know. That may be Snuff, maybe. Number 3, going back a ways, absolutely love this track. I loved it. When I bought this CD, from start to finish, I thought, you know what? These guys are going somewhere. Things didn't work out. Singer ended up having some vocal problems, some medical problems. Things didn't happen for him. But it's Bonham's Wait For You. All That I Can Do Is Wait For You. Great vocal on this. And we'd all grew up, with all the bands. They were influenced by Led Zeppelin, and in turn, we were influenced by Led Zeppelin. He's like, well, hey, this is John Bonham, the drummer from Led Zeppelin's son's band. So right out of the gate, they're kind of hitting the ground running. We're like, okay, well, let's go check it out. And then the song Guilty, that's my favorite Bonham track, Guilty, off the album The Disregard of Timekeeping. Absolutely amazing track. I don't know that it gets enough notoriety. But Wait For You was the song. And I remember a friend of mine, I won't embarrass him. I should, but I won't. My best friends in the world. And if you live around Brandon, you know exactly who I'm talking about. So you feel free to confront him with this. But I remember when he was having an adult relationship and, it's going to take some time to sort some things out. Show up at his apartment one day and he's got this song on. And singing along, I open the door and kind of catch him in the moment. Where he's singing, All That I Can Do Is Wait For You. He's caught in one of those moments of romance, right? Yeah, it's true. It's so funny to me. I look back in hindsight. He would be so incredibly embarrassed. I'll just tell you, it's Ernie Turner. It's Ernie Turner. Ernie, that's what you get for not calling me back the other day. Ernie Turner. I walked into his apartment, and he was playing the song Wait For You and singing and kind of dancing around a little bit, and I caught him unaware. And so, Ernie, you just made the show. Number 2, going back a little bit before the Bonham album dropped, I guess I was a sophomore in high school. I remember listening to this. We were on our way to Meridian to play Meridian in a soccer game. And one of the girls on the trip, one of the managers, had the cassette. And it was White Lion's Wait. I never had a chance to love you. It's true. I didn't. I never had a chance to love you, but I'm loving you now. But Mike Tramp, amazing. Mike, still out there playing. He'll probably come play your birthday, your bar mitzvah, your barbecue these days. But happy those songs are still being sung. Mike had some vocal issues several years ago and kind of regained his good health and his love for the road again. I don't know if White Lion ever reunites. I wish they would. Wish Vito Brada would do some things. But
Wait was really the introductory track for a lot of people into that amazing band. And what you remember is that black and white video and that great head of hair from Mike Tramp. He was a heartthrob, man. All the girls loved him. A little bit softer than me. Better singer, certainly. But Wait, number two. All right, number one. And I don't know what other song it could be. And this is, I urge this of all of you, because I every single day I get hit up by, Steve, what's going on, what's going on, what's going on, what's going on. Trust me, when there is something to know on David Mershon, you're not going to have to ask me. Because as soon as I learn it and I verify it, I'm going to go to the boards with it. I'm going to write an article about it. Trust me, you don't have to tweet me and ask me. I appreciate those that interact, but understand, I'm not just sitting on information waiting for a tweet. As far as you know, right, I may have the numbers to the new lottery. And just I'm just waiting for somebody to tweet me. Just, hey, the 100th person to tweet me today is going to get the winning lottery numbers. You never know. No, seriously. You got to have some patience. And we're going, that's right, Guns N' Roses' Appetite for Destruction was released yesterday. It was the anniversary on July 21st. I guess it was released back in 87. So it's been a long time. The album still sells, man. It's amazing. One of the best rock albums of all time. But this song didn't come off Appetite. It came off GNR Lies, which I love. I know a lot of people like, oh, you know, Steve, I don't know. I love GNR Lives. I love Mama Ken and all that stuff. I love it. I love everything about it. There's a lot of controversy with the song One in a Million. But Patience, I think, one of the best love songs written in my generation. So be sure and check it out. We're just kind of waiting on David to decide, and we'll have more about him here in the next segment of the show. So thanks, as always, for your support of the Top 10 List. If you have ideas for the Top 10 List, reach out, let us know. Best way to do that is hit me up on social media, or Roy, who is available at Dogmatic67, DAWGMATIC67. And he's the keeper of the list. He swears he's a little bit behind on the list. He's going to get those out today. Listen. With the amount of money I'm paying Roy, I can't complain, right? It was his idea in the first place. But he'll get caught up with you guys. And best thing to do is just maybe subscribe to him on Spotify. And then these great lists will just kind of auto-populate for you. But that's where we are. But you may have a great idea, too, and we're happy to give you credit. Some people don't want credit, but if you do, we're happy to give it to you. And thanks, as always, for your support of the Top 10 List. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart. That's right. Your friends, my friends, the people that always come through for you when you need the perfect Mississippi State gift, whether it be new clothing, new decorative items, maybe a housewarming gift, maybe something to detail out your fan cave. You can find it at Campus Bookmart. They also carry my books, too. So if you're looking to shop for some Mississippi State merch and say, hey, while I'm here, I'll pick up one of Steve's books before the new one comes out, you can do that, too. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, let me give you a phrase that pays. It's BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Roberts, and you know that. You know that. Get your free shipping on all items over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. But when you're in town, afford yourself some time to go by and take it all in. You'll be glad you did. Because there's not everything makes it online, right? Sometimes you're just kind of walking around. You're like, hey, this would go perfect in that little spot, right? Come by and check them out. I love them. They're like family to me. I hadn't been able to see them as much the last year or so because, you know, I hadn't had a sports book in a while. So we'll do some book signings there at Campus Bookmart this football season. We're excited about that. Excited about football, excited about new books, and excited about being together with my friends at Campus Bookmart. Again, go by and check them out next time you're in town. You'll be glad you did. All right, let's talk a little bit about the David Mershon situation. The first thing that I want to tell you, and I touched on this earlier, there's not a lot to know yet. Not even for David Mershon, there's not a lot to know yet. Dave has an advisor. Dave has a well-educated family that loves him. They're navigating through this. It's not like they're holding anybody hostage, right? The fall semester doesn't start for nearly a month. Guys are just kind of wrapping up, playing summer ball and things of that nature. And so he owes it to himself to work through this process. Even if he replicates this process next year, he'll be all the more wiser having gone through it. He'll know exactly how things work, you know, what the clubs are having to say. And if nothing else, even if he elects not to sign, you get some feedback. You find out what they like about you, what they like for you to work on. And so we're in a holding pattern, okay? Now, I can promise you that the option to return is very much a viable option for David Marchand. And it is not something they have ruled out. A lot of people thought, well, he got drafted, so that means he's got to sign. And then I've read some stuff on Facebook, and God love all of you. I love you. I love you without reservation. But some of you make my head hurt so bad that they don't make medication strong enough to knock that headache out. It's true. Now, I understand a lot of people are learning, and I'm always here to educate, inform, entertain. Sometimes we do a little song and dance. It is a rarity that a player drafted 11 through 20 has already agreed to a signing bonus. It's a rarity. It's different 1 through 10. But, Steve, why is it different? Well, because of the fact if you don't sign one of your top 10 picks, it costs you next year. There's penalties for it because they want guys to get drafted and to sign. That is not the same situation 11 through 20. And now I'm going to say this based on – you know, personal observations and knowledge of the process. A lot of people drafted in the last three rounds are essentially backup plans. Now, that's not an indictment on their ability. It's more about their signability. You take a flyer on one of these guys, and you're like, hey, we know the max we can offer them right now is 150. That's the max. And that's not, if you're a senior, you're not getting that. Like if you see what the Angels draft, and we're going to go over that in a second, they got some seniors drafted in the first 10 rounds that signed for $1,000. Because while there is a ceiling, there's no floor. And so the one thing that I can say, I believe without any reservation, is David Marchand is not willing to sign for $150,000. If he were, he would already be announced as a signer. Because you can go ahead and get that done. Because that $150,000 doesn't come out of the bonus pool. It's not a situation where the team's going to be penalized and not going to cost them any more money than they budgeted for. But David has a number in mind. I don't know what that number is. David and his family and his advisors do. And we're going to respect them. And we're going to love them. And we're going to be happy they're part of our family, whether that extends for another year or not. But if I had to call it today, I would say the chances of him signing are probably not very good. I think right now, if I had to lean, gun to my head, I would lean towards him coming back, and I'll tell you why. I have this pulled up in front of me. I'm going to refresh it just in case anything happened while I've been recording the show with the Angels draft. I want to thank whoever maintains the AngelsWin.com website. Because of the fact that shortly after I went through the Angels draft and tried to look up and assign signing bonuses and things, do all this work myself, within moments of me posting that, I see that somebody else had already linked the AngelsWin.com for it. And again, whoever runs this, it is great. They've got a spreadsheet set up with who signed, what they signed for, what the slot value was. A lot of information on here. I wish we could replicate that. I do. It's great. Super, super good job here by the folks at Angels Win. So let's navigate through this together, kids. Okay. So Christian Moore, you know him from Tennessee. Many of you don't like him. I like him a lot. And yeah, does he run his mouth a lot? Yes, so do I. Okay. So do I. He's a competitor. And yes, he runs his beak a little bit. And that's part of it, man. But he is a heck of a ball player. The Angels spend their first round pick on him. The slot value for that pick is 6.5 and change. He signed for $5 million. Now, it lists here $4,997,500. There's a $2,500 deal there between process and all this stuff. But he signed for $5 million. So they save just over $1.5 million by him going under slot.
You say, but Steve, why would he go under slot? Well, I don't know how the deal is constructed. You know, maybe he's got some bonus-laden incentives in his deal. But his signing bonus, $5 million. Chris Cortez from Texas A&M, we know him, and we really had some success against him. He also signed for less in slot. Slot value was just over $2 million, nearly $2.1. He signed for $1.6 million. So for their first two picks, right out of the gate, they've got some nice savings. Almost $2 million. You say, well, Steve, that doesn't make me feel good. Well, I'm about to. All right, they also had a compensatory pick in round two. You know, a lot of teams just had 20 picks. The Angels actually had 21 because they had a comp pick. 2C. Ryan Johnson from Dallas Baptist has a slot value of just over $1 million, nearly $1.1 million. 1.06300. So following recent trends, perhaps he signs a little bit below slot. Let's say he goes right around $1 million, right? And then right behind him, their third round pick, is Ryan Prager from A&M. Phenomenal Friday night starter, in the words of Ben Howland. Right at $950,000 slot value. And so if they pay him under slot, and at some point that runs out, right? There are a lot of agents out there willing to work with you, but not everybody's just going to say, hey, we're going to take under slot. Not my client, Jack, right? So you still have your second-round compensatory pick and your third-round pick to sign, and that's expected to take about $2 million, or close to $2 million, out of their bonus pool. As it stands right now, even including the overage allowance, they got $4.8 million. You say, but Steve, that didn't really help us. Well, if it takes them about $2 million to sign those two guys, that number goes down to $2.8 million. And you still got about half a dozen guys to work with. Now, one of the more intriguing things in the draft is the Angels' 11th-round pick, Trey Gregory Alford, right? Now, everybody signed 4 through 10 has signed. Everybody. Austin Gordon from Clemson, a pitcher, he signed for $575,000. So a little savings there. You're like, Steve, they keep saving this money. Well, yeah, pick number 5, Dylan Jordan, a high school pitcher. Yeah, his slot value was $480,000 and change. He signed for $1.2 million. So a lot of that savings went to Dylan Jordan. Not half of it, not most of it, but a lot of it went to him. Peyton Olenek, their 6th-round pick, signed a little bit below slot. You know, he signed for $200,000. The slot value was $366,000, so they get some money back there too, but at $167,000. Pick number 7 is Bridger Holmes from Oregon State. He also comes in a little bit under slot. Slot value is $286,000. He signs for $217,500. There we go. And then 8, 9, and 10, all seniors, Randy Flores from Alabama State, who is a heck of a ball player, Derek Clark, pitcher from West Virginia, and Ryan Nicholson, the first baseman from Kentucky, all get drafted 8, 9, 10, and their signing bonus is $1,000. So now all of a sudden they're like, hey, well, there's all this savings here. They saved $226,000 here, $196,000 there, $183,000 there. So right now they've saved $2.151 million. And you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you got 6 guys that you could sign, 7 technically, and you get $4.8 million to work with. So Trey Gregory Alford, their 11th-round pick, is rumored that he has a signing bonus requirement of over $2 million. Now, his slot value coming in at 11, there is no assigned slots 11 through 20. Remember, there's the $150,000 threshold. Anything above the $150,000 threshold counts against the bonus pool. And he wants north of $2 million. And the talk was on draft day, he's going to sign, and they're going to pay him. And so all of this savings, Mr. Facebook guy, all of this savings that has taken place so far is for this pick. by and large. It's like, hey, we need to save some money. So if he wants over $2 million and the threshold's $150,000, their savings thus far is $2,151. So they're going to exhaust if not all of their savings signing Trey Gregory offered. Now, all of a sudden, you start thinking, well, Steve, what happens next? Well, you still got some money to work with. You do. Fulton Lockhart, pitcher from Central Florida, apparently he's not willing to sign for $150 either, as is Nadir Victor, also from Central Florida. And there's Will Gervais. Now, those deals, unless Marchand is willing to take a lot less than I expect, those deals have to be finalized first, because you got to know you're not going to go sign a deal with Dave Marchand for $500,000 and not know what's going to happen with the guys that were drafted ahead of him. And if they were drafted ahead of him, that shows you where they were on their draft board. David Marchand, the fact that he's drafted in the 18th round has nothing to do with his talent level. It's got nothing to do with the statistics. It's just the Angels are like, you know what? I don't know if this guy's going to sign. Let's draft him. We'll begin to build a relationship. And if, let's say, for an example, somebody doesn't sign and all of a sudden we have the money to meet his price, then we'll give it to him. So there's still a lot of ebb and flow with this. It's not as finite. People want an answer. And trust me, I get it every single day. Every single day somebody messages me or asks me what's the latest on Marchand. I've done my best to provide updates as I get them. But the only update I have is he's expected to meet with the Angels later this week. And then and only then will he have an idea of what they're willing to pay him. Not before then. Now, Dave could wake up tomorrow and say, you know what, I'm just tired of dealing with this. I'm going to go back to Mississippi State. He could. I don't expect that. And I think honestly, as much as selfishly as we want him to come back, that's the wrong way to go about things. I think at the very least, you have to sit down with the Angels and listen to what they have to say. You would do that yourself. And you say, you know what? Hey, we want him back. We do want him back. He's the heart and soul of our team. I also know this. I know that David Marchand is worth more than a few $100,000. I think he's much more valuable than that. I think Dave Marchand is top 10 talent. I think Dave Marchand's a guy that probably should get $500,000 to sign. Or more, to be honest with you. You know, some people would say, you know what, Stevie's not the biggest guy. You know, I've known a lot of not so big guys that have played a long time in the big leagues. Dave Marchand's a dirtbag, man. The guy can absolutely pick it and stick it. And so, hey, if I'm the Angels, yeah, I got to get Trey Gregory offered handled. And again, that takes away so much of your savings, but you still got some money to play with. They're going to have enough money to offer David more than $150,000. And I think it's apparent and readily apparent to everybody that's paid attention, he's worth more than $150,000. And if he didn't think so, he would have already signed for $150,000. But we've just got to let it play out. Now, the number 19 pick just behind him is Connor Gatwood, out of Baker High School, grew up an Auburn guy. His dream's been able to go to Auburn and pitch for them. That kid's not going to sign. This is a guy that had a day two grade on him. A lot of people out there were projecting him to be among the top high school pitchers in the country. But he didn't have, you know, round one, round two. He was probably coming in third or fourth round. And this is a guy, too, a lot of people believe with a couple of years of college that he'll have the opportunity to play his way into day one, maybe a first or a second round type selection. Big-time guy. And he'll go pitch for Butch now, and we'll see what happens. But, you know, he's big, 6'5", 210-pounder. And so not expecting him to sign. And then there's Zachary Redner from Hillsborough Community College. And we'll see what happens with him, too. You know, he's another guy, too, clearly at 20. You know, he's a bit of a backup plan. But, yeah, they've already signed of the top back 10 guys. They've signed number 12. Fran O'Shell III from Duke for $150,000. They signed number 15, Braylon Caraballo, for $150,000. He was a high school guy. And then Lucas Ramirez, another high school guy, for $150,000. So the guys, I think, that are willing to accept $150,000 from Los Angeles Angels have already done so. So everybody else is still negotiating for a better deal.
And these guys have leverage. The guys that don't have leverage have already signed. They're just kind of waiting for assignment now, ready to go find out where they're going to be playing next. And so, but so much of it, once you see Trey Gregory offered sign, and his agent, because he holds all the leverage, is going to get every penny he can possibly get from them. And that's going to be a very significant development. That's going to affect what they can offer Marshawn. But, you know, for those of the people that are out there saying, Dave's holding us hostage, and I've seen some of that, you know, in the Facebook groups, not from anybody in the media, don't get me wrong. That's just not true. Dave is just working through this process, and he owes it to himself to get as much information as he can to decide what he wants to do. You know, I lean more towards him coming back because let's say, for an example, let's say he gets, you know, $100,000 to come back for another year at Mississippi State. We can kind of double dip because that $150,000 is going to be available next year too in the draft. And I think he is so much more valuable than that. And I think another year coming back, I think he'll show that. And so let's say he gets $100,000 from us, and then next year he gets drafted in, say, the eighth, ninth round and gets $250,000. Now all of a sudden you've taken that $150,000 that you turned down, and you're getting $350,000 in the course of, you know, of a year's time. And so that's a part to consider too. And so I just say that because so many people the questions never end. And it's because you love Mississippi State baseball and you love Dave Marchand. And I know if David signs, people will be disappointed, but we want the best for David. We want to be a program that people come to and have a chance to go play big league ball. We do. But if I was advising Dave Marchand, I would say you absolutely go have your meeting with them. You don't sign anything. We come back, we talk about it. We put the numbers on paper, and we figure out what's best for you long term. Because what you really want, you want a team to be invested in you. Right? It's like, hey, if they give you $150,000 or they give you $1,000 and you get down there and all of a sudden you make the bullpen coach mad, you're done. You know, you want people to have to get on the phone and call the general manager before they make a roster decision involving you. Because that's what happens. You know, it's not Brian Cashman making these decisions for the Yankees at low A ball. You know, it's your minor league manager. He's like, hey, we paid this kid, you know, $50,000. He's not providing any value. He's just taking reps away from everybody else. So we're going to cut that guy loose. That's what happens in minor league baseball. It's not like it used to be. You know, any guy that's out there that you're not invested in, that is not providing value, gets cut because he's just taking reps away from the guys that your franchise is invested in. And so if you're young David Marchand, you want them to make a financial commitment to you to give you some sense of security. But again, Dave holds all the cards here. You know, Dave and his advisors and his family could just say, hey, we may be willing to sign, but we're not going to sign for this. We're not going to sign for $200,000. I'm just throwing numbers out there. We're not going to sign for anything less than this number. And if they're not willing to meet that number, then Dave Marchand owes it to himself to come back to Mississippi State and prove to the Angels and everybody else that I'm worth that number and more next year. But everybody just needs to hang loose. Just pump the brakes. We don't need anybody getting on social media. Just let it all play out. Your baseball coaches, everybody involved, understands how this process works. They're in regular contact with the Marchands. They're in regular contact with advisors. Everybody is communicating. Nobody's in the dark here. It's just a process that has to kind of play out. And so, again, the preliminary reports and opinions about, oh, he's expected to sign, that's just premature and at this point kind of inaccurate. He may ultimately sign. I'm not going to rule that out. But at this point, there's just nothing to really know yet other than the fact that Dave is working through this process. Now, switching gears here, talking portal stuff here. You may have seen it. Nolan McCarthy selected Georgia. He's following Nick Amoretti, former Mississippi State player, Nick Amoretti, who left Kentucky for Georgia. The final three were Alabama, Georgia, and Mississippi State, and he's headed to Georgia. And it's disappointing. It is. I'm not going to sit here and say it's not. It is. But, this was a guy we would have liked to have had. And the truth of the matter is a lot of people said, well, you know, maybe we slow played this thing too long. That's just not really true. I mean, we had him in the day after the draft. You know, then he went and visited Alabama. He's visited Georgia. You know, so it's like everybody kind of treated him the same way.
But there was a relationship, obviously, with Nick Amoretti that headed to Georgia. And so Nolan's now headed there. And Georgia, obviously, a team that has done a lot in the portal. And I don't know if you've seen the last few days, they've kind of tweaked the portal rankings a little bit. Your Bulldog's now fifth in the country. And even then, that's still not enough for some people. Like, I can't believe, before I was like, I can't believe we're in the top 10. Now we're in the top 10. I can't believe we're behind Alabama. Yeah. Guys, number one, these rankings are only going to continue to improve as they get more data. We've only been doing this a couple of years, right? And I'm not even involved with 64 Analytics. Those guys, I have been in contact with the guy that owns and operates that website really for a year now. You know, talked to him last year before this thing even became a big thing. And so they're working through it. They care. They want to get it right as best they can. I mean, it's so difficult to predict future human performance. But they care. It's not like they are beholden to anybody else, but the reality of it is that the Bulldogs right now rank fifth in the country, for whatever that's worth. But there were a lot of people that used those same rankings to beat Mississippi State up early. We're like a week into the portal. Oh, we're getting crushed in the portal. Now, Kentucky and Georgia already got all these kids lined up, and now you look now, you know, Mississippi State's fifth. So were the rankings better back then because they fit your narrative a little bit more? Hey, the rankings show we're getting crushed. Now the rankings show that we're one of the best in the country in the portal. So which is it? You can't have it both ways. Either the rankings were wrong back then, or they're wrong now, or they've always been wrong. But it can't be, well, they were better back then before they tweaked the formula than they are now. So if you use those rankings to beat up Mississippi State baseball a month ago, now you must use those same rankings to praise Mississippi State baseball's efforts in the portal. Oh, you're not willing to do that? Well, then that goes to tell me that it wasn't the rankings that mattered. It's just that you were looking for any opportunity possible to kind of beat up your coaching staff and beat up your program. Right? Let's be honest with one another. Because now that the rankings don't fit your narrative, now all of a sudden we don't want to talk rankings. Yeah, I want to talk Mississippi State baseball. And my allegiance is to the M over S. And by proxy, it's then committed to the coaches and players that wear said logo. Because if they win, then Mississippi State wins, which means I win and you win. I'm going to share with this, and we're going to change topics before we get out of here. I'm going to share this with you as earnestly and honestly if I can. If Mississippi State has to lose in order for you to be right, you got the wrong mentality. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. If you're looking to bring a large group of folks to Starkville, whether it be a ball game weekend, just a chance to kind of get away, look no further than the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Just Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse. You'll be glad you did. When you do, their Facebook page will kind of populate up for you. You can peruse the pictures of the fine amenities that are available to you and your guest when you stay at Stark Vegas Clubhouse. That great big back porch area, I can't oversell that. Great place to just kind of sit, maybe eat, have an adult beverage, watch a sunset, just relax. Out there kind of in the country all by yourself, got one neighbor out there. We want you to be respectful of those folks. You don't want to ruin their time. But you can get out there in the peace and quiet of Oktibbeha County and just kind of enjoy being together. Full service kitchen. Take turns cooking. I don't know what you want to do, but you can do it. Also, the wet bar out there. The fire pit area. Conversations around the fire pit are just more meaningful. This place is available to you just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. You can do your tailgating there, right? You don't have to worry about your stuff walking off. Just kind of do it all right there, you know. And so nevertheless, I encourage you to check it out. Maybe it's a back-to-school trip. Maybe it's a scenario where perhaps that you want to get the girls together, the guys together, the cousins together, the couples together. You can handle it all there. 5 bedrooms, 2 baths, and a lot of room just kind of spread out and just kind of enjoy being alive. Now, when you Google, some booking options are going to come up for you. You can book through Airbnb. You can book through VRBO. I don't know your preferences. However, if you want to save a little money on your stay, I can help you with that. book through the Evolve website. That's E-V-O-L-V-E, the Evolve website. That also will pop up for you. And use promo code BSR10. That's BSR10. Gets you 10% off your stay just by being a listener to this show. No better place to stay in the Golden Triangle than the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. All right, a few other things I want to talk about before we get out of here. You know, we have had some Diamond Dogs signed for some money here as of late. Toronto Blue Jays announced a couple signings. Blue Jays second round pick Cal Steven signs for $1.16750. So you can add $2,500 to that. You can kind of do the math yourself. But slot value on that pick was 1.489. So it's a little bit under slot. But hey, Cal Steven now is signed for $1.1 million. That's big. Significant for sure. In addition to that, Colby Holcomb signs for $200,000. Actually signed above slot. Slot value was $190,100. He signs for $200K, which says a lot about his potential. Listen, I'm a Colby Holcomb fan. I also understand we have reached a point that we just simply couldn't trust him in a ballgame. We've been there before, too. But we wish Colby the best. I know that it's not like Colby went out there and tried to mess up for us, right? I mean, he wanted to go out there and get outs, and sometimes he looked absolutely dominant. The New York Mets have signed Cal Steven. Excuse me. They didn't sign Cal Steven. The Blue Jays did. But the Mets signed Nate Dohm. Slot value, $934,800. He signed for $797,500. So you can do the math. He signed for $800,000. There is that $2,500 test and stuff. There's just a little bit of adjustment there. But he signed for $800K. So you got some guys out there getting a head start at life and getting a little coin. And, you know, we do expect everybody else to sign. We'll find out the deals. Mershon is the only one of the 11 dogs that were drafted that there is the possibility of him coming back. You know, I guess we're kind of waiting to see what Dakota Jordan's going to sign for. Let me just double check and see if something's happened since we've been together, because you know it's getting close, right? It's getting close. Let's see here. Yeah, no talk yet about that. So we'll see how things kind of play loose there. They constructed a pretty good scenario for him to be able to get basically second-round money in the fourth round. So we'll see how that plays out. And, you know, we do expect Cam Schulke to sign. Big Cam Schulke fan. And I don't think he'll sign for the full 150, but he won't get 1,000 either because he had a year of leverage to come back from. But, yeah, I mean, Cam needed to go. Let's just kind of call it for what it is. If Cam didn't cash in now, this time next year, he'd come back and be a senior and then probably, you know, have to sign for $1,000 or sign an undrafted free agent deal and get nothing as a signing bonus or next to nothing. And that's a tough life when you don't have money in the bank, especially if minor leaguers out there kind of roaming around. You get just a very, very minuscule salary, just enough to pay your expenses. You're basically living off your signing bonus. And if you don't have much of a signing bonus, then all of a sudden your parents got to start chipping in again. That's part of the deal about being an independent person. But, yeah, so of the 11, we feel confident 10 of the 11 will sign. Then Mershon, of course, is the one we're still waiting on. Not going to belabor the point there. But I also want to share with you, too, our friend Kendall Rogers, and maybe you guys see him differently than I do. I call him a friend. I correspond with Kendall throughout the offseason and throughout the season, just kind of trading information. He's a great guy. He had a free article that's worth your time and effort if you love college baseball. If you are a person that said, you know what, hey, college baseball hadn't always gotten its shake when it's come to scholarships, there's some good news that may be on the way. And Kendall, of course, writes a lot of stuff behind a paywall, but he didn't. And you can find it. Matter of fact, I'm going to retweet it for you just to make it easy for you to find. I'm scrolling through his timeline here to make sure we find it. But, yeah, he's done a really good job kind of putting this thing together. So you can kind of understand kind of where things stand and what's next. And so I want to retweet that right now before we get out of here. Doing it right now. And so Kendall is a guy that's well-sourced.
And as you guys know, there's going to be a new model for NCAA sports. And so one of the things that we have said for some time is that baseball is underfunded. And it is. You know, as a father of a former college baseball player, I can tell you it is. In many respects, you pay to play. You know, we got a little bit of a scholarship from Williams Baptist, and we had to pay the rest. All because our son excelled in baseball rather than football or basketball. So baseball's got 11.7 scholarships, but it appears that the scholarship numbers are going to come up. Now, a couple years ago, when Greg Sankey led that committee, and Kendall references that, it goes, hey, we think we'll go 17 or 18 scholarships. And a lot of people are like, well, that doesn't make a lot of sense. But now it looks like the roster limit's going to be 35. The current roster is 40. But at 35, there is the possibility that everybody could be on a full scholarship. Now, what does that mean for college baseball? Well, it means a couple things. Number one, it means that it's going to dilute the talent a little bit. Because you're not going to be able to stockpile. Those five extra scholarships that you had, you're not going to be able to have them anymore. Roster spots, excuse me. You didn't have scholarships. But you had 40 guys. You go to 35 and everybody's on full scholarship. Well, that's going to, number one, stop a lot of guys that are on the fence about going pro and to come into college. Because there's a lot of people out there, no matter what you may think, it's that they can't afford to send their kids to college. And so as a result, they sign a deal so they're no longer a burden on their parents. And as parents, you would say, hey, it's fine. You know, we'll figure it out. We'll get loans, whatever we got to do. But there are a lot of people, it's like, you know what, hey, instead of everybody going to debt, I mean, I'm going to college anyway to improve my draft stock. I'm probably going to get out of there before I graduate anyway. Let me just go ahead and sign. And then if things don't work out, it's pretty much part of the deal these days. They'll pay for you to go to college, get your education. So you can still get that education. But the rest of that story is that we've had so many players over the years, not at Mississippi State, but it's in college baseball, that have had to basically use their signing bonuses to pay off their student loans. And so while their athletic peers in other sports, not only do they get a full scholarship, they get a bigger stipend, and many of them get much better NIL opportunities, not only do they graduate debt-free, they graduate with a little bit of a nest egg. You know, when Ethan Small got drafted, the very first thing he did was write a check to pay off his student loans. That's just not fair. It's not right. That's something I've been chirping about for years on this show, and I'm glad to see that that's about to change. And then for every full scholarship on the men's side, you've got to have one on the female side. So that's probably going to be either softball or soccer or a combination of both, at least here in the South. Maybe different in South Dakota. You know, they may decide that they want to use those scholarships for on the women's hockey team. I don't know. But I have always felt, and maybe I see things differently than most, that I think anybody that goes out and represents your university on the fields and courts and tracks of play shouldn't have to pay to do so. You know, they're out there repping Mississippi State, giving us an incredible amount of marketing and advertising, especially the star athletes. You know, what do you think Jake Mangum was worth to Mississippi State? How many Jake Mangum jerseys were sold? And of course, this is all before NIL. And so Jake didn't factor into the financial windfall from that. But what was Jake Mangum worth to Mississippi State? How many people became Mississippi State fans, or how many young people wanted to get an M over S cap signed by Jake Mangum? What did Jake Mangum mean for the Mississippi State brand? What did Tanner Allen and Rowdy Jordan mean for the Mississippi State brand? How many hats did we sell? How many jerseys did we sell? How many pictures and tickets? And how many moms had to sit out there on a hot summer day waiting for their kid to get their items that are baseball signed by Tanner Allen or Rowdy Jordan or their favorite Diamond Dog? And so you begin to think about that aspect of it. You know, we certainly benefit from them coming here and playing at a high level. And I don't think they should have to pay to do that. You know, football doesn't have to pay. Of course, football makes a lot more money.
Basketball doesn't have to pay. Basketball makes money in most places, right? You don't have near the roster size either. The coaching salaries are much higher. But most basketball programs make money, especially those that make the tournament. And we're in a situation now that obviously our fans are back. I mean, for years you heard everybody kind of saying, you know, I wish people would come back to games. You know, down the stretch last year, that was the toughest ticket in the state of Mississippi, is finding a ticket to a weekend basketball game at Mississippi State. You know, so we're in a good situation there. But when you begin to look at the total conglomerate, you know, just because you excel in one sport over another, there has been scholarship inequity. And so that appears to be on the verge of being corrected. That's a big thing. And as somebody on the jeanspage.com message board said, I'm glad Ron Polk is allowed to see this. I mean, it's only taken us forever and a day. But this should happen. But I don't think it should stop there. And listen, I know I don't know all the economics of running an institution of higher learning. I understand that. But one of the things that I do know this is that that professor is teaching the same class, and one more student on the scholarship roll is not going to change much. You know, the difference is that the money that the school would get, the variable, right, the parents having to write that check to pay the difference or the financial aid, there obviously is some money lost there. You know, so let's not be completely oblivious to the fact that it doesn't cost something. But so much of these services that we provide, having one or two more students there is not going to change much. This happened to be on, so the demand for the professor is not going to change, or their student assistants, whatever it's involved. But this is something that should have happened a long time ago. I'm glad that it's finally happening. It's not official yet, but this new model, I think it's one of those things that, you know, I have said for many years that all the schools that want to fully fund baseball should be allowed to do so. And by the same token, those that want to fully fund hockey should be allowed to do so. You know, we should not have a vote in what South Dakota State does with their hockey program. Zero. We shouldn't have anything to do with that. And by the same token, I don't think South Dakota State should have anything to say about baseball. You know, there has to be a balance that we can strike here that allows maybe the niche sports in your neck of the woods to be able to be rewarded. You know, we talk about head counter sports and things of that nature and equivalency sports. And, you know, it's time to change the way we look at things. And you want to have better players come to college, make it more affordable for them to come. You want to change the game? You want to grow the game? Then give people the option. There are so many young people out there, and it's not as bad as it used to be. And that's the thing you think about now. And then, now there's like this little niche of players that really have nowhere to go because we've restructured minor league baseball. There used to be a lot of guys that would go to junior college and play 2 years and then get drafted, you know, 35th, 36th round and get into minor leagues and hang around there for a couple years and try to prove themselves. Well, now that option is no longer available to them. In addition to that, many of them can't afford to go to a major school. So they get down with JUCO ball, they don't get a degree, you know, what kind of job are they going to get? You know, and so you've got to make, if we really want to change the things, you've got to change things. You can't just expect everybody else, you know, and I've said it for years now, the leadership of the NCAA has failed us. And maybe perhaps with new leadership, maybe we're going to get some things done we should have got done a long time ago. Listen, I've opined here long enough. I'll be back with you guys on Wednesday. Look forward to getting back with you. We'll begin to, again, to work through our opponent previews. And, hopefully we'll have some college baseball news between, down in the end of the week. We'll see. We'll see how things go. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.